app, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. An American mother and daughter held captive by Hamas for nearly 2 weeks are free and have spoken with President Biden. Judith Renan and her 17-year-old daughter were at a kibbutz for a birthday celebration when it was overrun by Hamas militants October 7th. CBS's Charlie Daggett in Tel Aviv.
Meyer Hecht is their rabbi in Evanston, Illinois.
This news that Judith and Natalie have been released from the hands of Gaza Hamas terrorists is overwhelming. And really, we have this tremendous gratitude to God.
The breakthrough came when Hamas announced it was releasing the two Americans on humanitarian grounds, following negotiations through Qatari mediators.
After a report earlier that President Biden said yes when asked whether Israel should delay a potential ground invasion of Gaza until more hostages can get out, the White House now says that Mr. Biden did not hear the ground invasion question and thought he was being asked whether he would like to see more hostages released. The U.S. House starts again Monday in its bid to elect a new speaker, this after Congressman Jim Jordan lost a third vote today and has lost the support of his own colleagues. CBS's Willie James Inman.
Even former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy admits that House GOP conference is broken.
We are in a very bad place right now, yes.
In a last-minute bid to save Jordan's candidacy, 7 of the 8 Republicans who voted to oust Kevin McCarthy agreed to be reprimanded by their House GOP colleagues if the Jordan holdouts would change their votes.
Another Trump co-defendant in the Georgia election interference case, lawyer Kenneth Chesbro, has pleaded guilty. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Like Sidney Powell, who pleaded guilty, Chesbro demanded a speedy trial. The other 15 defendants were happy to wait as long as possible. So the question is, why did he plead guilty at the very last moment before the trial began? Like Powell, the plea deal is a bargain compared to what he would have faced if he had been found guilty. But now he has to testify against his former client, Donald Trump.
The search is underway for the suspect in a killing of a Maryland judge. CBS's Jeff Pagaz reports.
52-year-old judge Andrew Wilkinson had just arrived home after work when the gunman opened fire.
His wife and son were at home at the time.
Sheriff Brian Albert is leading the investigation.
This was a targeted attack on Judge Wilkinson.
Police are searching for 49-year-old Pedro Argote just hours before the shooting. Investigators say the Washington County Circuit Court judge presided over the suspect's divorce hearing, granting custody of Argote's 4 children to his wife.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. More details have emerged regarding the incident on West Spruce Street in Chippewa Falls that caused a shelter-in-place order. Authorities say an intruder was threatening the resident with a gun before she escaped through a window and jumped down to the officers surrounding the house. Law enforcement authorities discovered the body of the suspect using a robot and determined the suspect had died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Authorities did not identify the man. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking hunters to avoid placing their deer stands in or around ash trees. The invasive emerald ash borer insect has spread throughout the state, and infested trees could unexpectedly snap or drop a large branch. To make matters more difficult, it can be hard to tell if a particular tree is already infested. Due to the unstable nature of the infested trees, setting up a tree stand in one could lead to serious injury. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Are you ready to start a meaningful career in healthcare? Are you looking for a job that fits your work-life balance? Become a certified direct care professional today and make life better for older adults or people with a disability. Wisk Caregiver Careers makes it easy with free online training plus earn a $500 bonus. See your name on Wisconsin's Certified Direct Care Registry. Sign up today at WiskCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Mads here with the Mad Music Menu, your new curated weekly selection of delectable music treats local DJs will be spinning all across town. Follow along on Instagram at Mad Music Menu. Today, Friday, October 20th, we start at Bandit Taco with Audio Max spinning from 7 to 11 p.m. Jeff K is setting the mood at Notchfield from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. And starting at 10 p.m. is 92.7's very own Mad Unity Radio Show with a special analog set featuring guest Paul Gordon as well as host Cosmo Brown. And I'll be making an appearance to tell y'all why I started this menu. DJ Koale caps off our night at Rigby from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And big shout out to Kitty Spit and Clown Baby, two Madison DJs throwing it down at Pull the Shade Club in Chicago from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. If you're heading down to the Windy City, go support these talented DJs. Come out and support these fantastic local legends and dance locally. Remember to follow at Mad Music Menu on Instagram for a fresh new menu every Wednesday at noon.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley.
93.5.
The Tap.
93.5.
The Tap.
Climate policies.
Anything we can do without having to do any more work, any more policies, is probably a very good thing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So earlier in the week, the folks at the Strategic Organizing Center and the Communication Workers of America, they released a new report. Evidently, the Medicare open enrollment period just opened up, and they're like, hey, you know, the people who work in the call centers who help those folks, there's some problems here. Workers have poor health care. The survey that came out said something outrageous, like 90% of the workers said that they're the primary earner in their household, and 6 in 10 have kids under 18, and that this number is just mind-blowing. 90% of them have medical debt. That just blows my mind. I'm here to share some thoughts on this report and maybe what can be done about it. I've asked Christine Jimenez to come talk with us. Christine is a call center worker at Maximus. Christina, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
So walk me through some of this report, because I'm looking through these statistics, especially that one that says 90%. 90% of your workers, your co-workers have medical debt. That is mind-blowing to me.
Yes, we do have medical debt. For people who speak on affordable health care, cannot have affordable health care because we pay too high in premiums. Our deductibles are way too high. So instead of going to the doctor to get a bill, we just don't go.
And, you know, the sad reality is that for a lot of Americans, that's the reality. And you know, you guys are union members. I say all the time, you know, unions fight for better wages, hours, conditions, better benefits, better health security, better retirement security. And sadly, there are a number of places who have, you know, not kept up. So it appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, that potentially sometime in November, a strike could be on the horizon to fight for those better wages, hours, conditions, and benefits.
Yes, if we are not taken serious, we will be striking on November the 9th because we're tired of being secondhand citizens. We're not robots. We deserve better.
And look, you made an interesting point, and I hear this from my nurse friends all the time too. You know, they who work in healthcare and don't have adequate healthcare for themselves. You're dealing with people trying to get them care to make sure that they're protected, while yourself, it's how do you do that? I'm literally dumbfounded sometimes when I hear these stories and I go, how do you do this?
It's hard because you're sitting there looking at all these plans, trying to make sure the person that you're speaking to have the best plan while you're sitting here with a cold and you can't go and see if there's anything worse with the code, or you need glasses, you can't go get those glasses. So you're sitting here looking at all these different plans, knowing that you can't use those plans.
Now, Maximus, this is a giant company, isn't it?
Yes, it is one of the biggest companies to have a Medicare and Medicaid contract.
And, you know, the reality is they could give you guys decent health care. They could pay you a decent wage. And it's, you know, like Sean Fain at the UAW says, you know, they can, they just don't want to. Is that the case?
That's exactly the case. There's been plenty of times where they dangle little carrots in front of your face to make sure that their pockets are lined. But when it comes to lining your pocket, there's nothing. There's an empty pocket.
Now, I see one of the demands you guys are making is a minimum wage of $25 an hour and protections from unfair layoffs. It sounds like a lot of the same stuff that I saw, you know, coming out of the Kaiser Permanente strike. And again, as I said about them, you know, strikes work. Look at what happened. Not only did they get it in their contract in California, $25 minimum wage, the governor signed a bill saying that healthcare workers were going to eventually get $25 an hour. So for me, strikes work. So the message to Maximus is maybe learn the lesson before you need a strike, right?
Exactly, because there's been times to where we threaten to strike and they, like I said before, dangle a little carrot. Hey, don't go on strike, please. And then when we do go on strike, we do win. We do win a lower deductible, or we have won a lower deductible. We have won different things. Now, if you can see that, let's keep rolling. Work with us.
Now, I've talked to other call center workers over the years, and I hear the story that, look, these are long-hour jobs. They're highly controlled jobs, lots of surveillance, lots of harassment that goes into if you're not keeping up, if you're not doing, you know, what they expect or demand of you, and the wages are not great. And coming out of the pandemic, coming out of all of this inflation, wages certainly haven't kept up. So I got to imagine that the appetite for some kind of an action to get better wages has got to be fairly high amongst your members.
Oh, yes. Because like you were saying before, we are single income homes. So for us to be able to keep up with inflation, keep up with bills, children, we need to have better pay. So the only way to do that, if you give it to us.
Now, I guess November 9th is the day that you guys have chosen, because I guess that's the day you guys have chosen for a potential strike. Any indication on potentially where this goes? Are we expecting an action, or do you think that they'll come around? What has history shown us?
Well, the way history has shown with Maximus, we're striking.
And how many locations around the country are Maximum employees at?
At least 5 to 7. We're mostly in southern states, so like Florida, Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Virginia. So yeah, we're a little bit everywhere in the South.
No, I mean, that to me, that is remarkable, Christina. I mean, that is the fact that you've got, you know, union members in southern states going, you know what? We got to go on strike. If we're going to get anything, we've got to go on strike. You don't often think of, you know, the South as the hotbed of labor activity. But I got to tell you, I've been seeing more and more because help me here. What do you think this is? Do you think it's the inflation? Do you think it's coming out of the pandemic where you were told you were frontline heroes and essential and all of that nonsense? Or is it a combination of both?
Well, we're actually not union members. We're actually organized to create a union.
Okay.
But I do think it is a combination of both, whereas the inflation and then us be like, hey, you are guys are essential, but not really.
Not really. Wow. question I have then, how can I help? How can listeners help? Is this a pressure campaign that we could pull off? Are there people to call? Are there emails to write? What do we do?
So we are asking for donations to our solidarity fund, because when we do strike, you know, we don't get pay. So to make it a little easier for the single income homes, we do offer that. And then just looking on social media, pushing, making it known to the public, writing to senators, just making sure that this is a frontline issue, because it is a frontline issue, because we handle everyone's insurance calls.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Christine Jimenez. She is a call center worker at Maximus. If you want to check out the website, callcenterworkersunited.org is where you can find more information on what's going on here. Callcenterworkersunited.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. You know, walk me through your average day if you would, because, you know, I don't think the average person knows what you guys go through. Because I remember someone telling me that, like, every second of your day is monitored. You know, you go to the bathroom, there's a stopwatch following you around. There's a constant push, and a constant push to get people off the phone and hurrying mm-hmm. through things and all kinds of. So walk me through what a day looks like for you.
So I work Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5. A normal day is logging at 8:30, and as soon as I log in, a call gets pushed through. I haven't even rubbed the sleep out of my eye completely or drunk my coffee. I do work from home, so I do have that leeway, if you will. But as soon as you log into the phone, you're constantly getting calls, constantly. There is no breaks between calls. We do, you know, have the normal 15-minute break. When it comes to getting the stopwatch to go to the bathroom, we have a 6-minute grace period, if you will. If we go over that 6-minute grace period, that's time deducted from our card.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you go over 5 minutes and 59 seconds, get ready to count some time off your card.
So you get no time between calls. How do you make sure that what you've done is right? Are calls time that you have to get off of calls during? Because I've heard this is another thing that happens as well. That you only have a certain amount of time for each call. They want you banging through people quickly. Is that part of your experience?
Yes. So if you take longer than, let's say, 10 to 15 minutes, they're reaching out to you, hey, why is this call taking so long? But if you take less than 5 minutes, oh, why did this call take too short? Why are you not reading scripting properly? What we want to make sure that you're getting all this information out, but you're punishing me because I'm taking the full care of the caller. But if I'm not taking the full care of the caller, you're kind of stuck between two different places of what can I do? I'm being monitored on how long people are on hold. Every second of my day is being monitored, either by my own supervisor or another supervisor.
So again, I go back to this harassment that happens in the workplace, especially around union issues. Because as you've pointed out and corrected me on, that you guys are in the process of organizing. How difficult mm-hmm. has that been?
It is very difficult. When it comes to Maximus, the most popular thing that they say is that unions want your money. That's all they want. They want to help with issues. And with that mindset, especially with us being a one-income home, every penny counts.
Yeah.
So with that scare tactic and then people not being able to talk freely about certain issues, it's a very scary thing to be a organizing member and making sure that you still have a job at the end of the day, because we are at work or at will states. So with at work states or at will work states, then you can be fired at any time.
And see, for me, that point right there alone, everything else aside, that one point is the reason that in a state like yours, and Pennsylvania as well as an at-will state, that one thing right there is the reason you join a union. It's the reason you exactly. get a contract, because in that contract is going to be, this isn't an at-will situation. You can only be fired for cause. You have to do something wrong. And that seems fair to me.
Right. And then without that protection, Like I said, I can be fired and I'm off tomorrow. I can go back to work on Monday and say, oh, we don't need you anymore. And it's a mind-boggling thing to have to worry about your job.
No, and I had to. You said you talked about, you know, unions only want your money. When I was doing organizing, I said, look, because I would get that as well. I'd say, I wish that I could take every dime that I have and get the kind of return on investment that I get for the $60 a month that I pay in union dues. I wish I could get that kind of return on investment, better wages, superior health care, retirement plan, you know, a voice on the job, job security, vacation, sick days, personal days. I wish I could get that kind of return on everything that I have. So for me, I think the sale in this moment has got to be, look, you know, union job, better life. Simple, clear, concise.
That's what I definitely try to tell my coworkers. You pay all this money to Maximus for Maximus not to do anything. Why don't you pay something to help you in the long run?
There's an excellent point. You're paying dues by not earning a decent wage.
Exactly.
Excellent point. Again, last question. Is there any marching order for me, for our listeners, for folks? Because November 9th is coming up fairly quickly. Anything that we should be preparing for, anything helping with? Give me some orders.
Put the word out. Make sure that people are aware of what's happening in Maximus. Tell your senator to tell President Biden to investigate us, or Maximus, to make sure that they are upstanding their contract. Like I said, spread the word. And as much as we love our job and want to help everybody, we're willing to strike.
No, look, you got to support your families. Look, family comes first. You got to put food on the table, a roof over the head, and not 90% of you with medical debt. That is insane to me. But Christina, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us and taking some time. I look forward to talking to you again as this goes on down the road. Hopefully no strike. Hopefully you get what you earn. But if you have to, you know, one day longer, one day stronger, sister. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. Our Christine Jimenez, she's a call center worker there at Maximus. Check out the website, callcenterworkersunited.org, callcenterworkersunited.org. We'll get links out on social media. How you can take a look at that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Isn't that mind-blowing? I mean, really, mind-blowing. 90% of the people in that survey have medical debt. They've avoided getting medical treatment because they can't afford it. They've postponed medical treatment because they can't provide it. And look, this is just one employer. You could magnify this across the entire country. I read something earlier. 100 million people have medical debt. 100 million. You're talking a third of the country holding medical debt. And I would argue it's probably even higher than that when you get to the point to where, you know, a lot of that gets written off. And a big part of that is just how obscene things cost, how outrageous the cost system is in our healthcare system. It's a it's shameful what we see. And look, I saw the story on Paxlovid. I think it's Paxlovid is the drug. Pfizer says they're gonna price the COVID medication at $1,390 for a 5-day course. Researchers said that when they broke down the costs, it only cost Pfizer about $13 to produce. So you're looking at a 10,000% markup. Gee, I wonder where that money goes. And I know, but Rick, the first pill costs a lot of money. And it does, I agree. The first pill costs a boatload of money. And a lot of that comes out of the fact that, you know, guess what? Tax dollars went into that. Research money went into that. Healthcare, money from the federal government, from us, went into that first pill. The research and development, all of that. So the fact that 10,000% increase, wow, mind-blowing. Let's go to the phones. We got Michael in New Mexico on line one. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Rick. I love your show. I just started listening to it. I wanted to tell you a really quick story about unionizing. Do you mind?
Please do. Go.
Years ago, there was a group of carpenters and electricians and woodworkers and sewing people, fabric people, and they weren't in a union. The union had burned them out, and they all had to go to upstate New York in order to make a living. And about, I'd say, more than 70% of all shows that were built in cities all over the country, like a traveling show, like Walt Disney Mice on Ice, had to be done by either one or two union shops, or it didn't get done. If you were a Broadway play did not go on wheels and go across the country, unless you were a non-union worker, because the people who were making all the money didn't want to take any out of their pockets, and they certainly weren't going to put it in ours. So basically, they got burned out by the union because they weren't in the union and couldn't get into the union. So to make a long story short, eventually the shop unionized, and 300 people who ended up working all over the world doing things like theme parks, Lincoln Center, Spoleto Opera Festival, Chicago Greater Opera. I mean, just name an opera festival or a big event that goes on every year. It was done by a group of people in the Adirondacks. And I knew that once that union, the last union I remember was Pan Am and United Airlines, when they were taking all the airplane unions out. And that seems to be the beginning of our problems, the mid-70s.
No, there's no question about that. The deregulation fetish of the mid-70s. And, you know, again, thank you, Teddy Kennedy, and the neocons of that era who put us on this path. And, you know, Jimmy Carter for signing airline and trucking deregulation, and Ronald Reagan for putting the pedal to the metal on the rest of it. You are spot on right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to compliment you for being one of the few people who doesn't make any money talking about this crap. but it's 90% of the people who do the work. So unless they start speaking up, they might as well just bend over and get the Vaseline out, because it's going to happen again.
There you go. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. There's an image. Something clearly I do not want to happen to anyone. Unless that's what you're into, this is the reality of what where we are. You go back to that mid 70s era where, you know, we were told by big corporations, by corporate America, how wonderful it was going to be if we just deregulated, and we've had this deregulation fetish ever since. Let corporate unleash corporate America, and what does that mean? That means more profits for corporate America and lower wages for working people. The reality is these big call centers that, you know, we were just talking about, they took jobs away from union companies that were doing this work before, because they underbid them. And you got, oh, we're going to privatize it. We can't have public sector workers doing, you know, work for Medicare or Medicaid. No, we need to privatize and profitize. And again, I go back to show me something that we used to do for ourselves, from roads and bridges to parking authorities to water and sewer to prisons to call centers. Show me something that we used to do for ourselves that we've privatized that actually works better and is cheaper. It doesn't exist. All of that stuff was just a ploy to give up the commons, to give up the stuff that we the people owned as part of our nation to the hands of the profiteers who then turn around and screw us over. You know, I have Morris Pearl on the program all the time. Patriotic millionaire. He says this right out and without shame. I make my money off of you making monthly payments. So when they privatize all of this stuff, a portion of every bill, someone like Morris puts in their pockets. Appreciate the call, Michael. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1926. That was the day that one of the great labor leaders in U.S. history, Eugene V. Debs, died in Elmhurst, Illinois. In 1894, Debs gained national attention when his American Railway Union launched a boycott in support of the striking workers of the Pullman Palace Car Company. The strike and the boycott were crushed by federal troops and a federal court. Debs served 6 months in jail for his role in the boycott. Later, Debs would again go to jail for standing up for his beliefs. He was convicted for speaking out against U.S. involvement in World War I. He was among the founders of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, in 1905. He ran as a socialist for President of the United States 5 times, receiving nearly 1 million votes running his campaign from a prison cell in 1920. In 1891, Debs wrote an article for the Locomotive Fireman's Magazine titled The Unity of Labor. His words stand as an eloquent case for worker solidarity. Debs wrote, quote, "If working men were united in sympathetic bonds, if a bricklayer could comprehend the fact that he is dependent on the hod carrier, if the locomotive engineer could grasp the fact that he is dependent on the locomotive fireman, the interdependence of labor would at once constitute a bond of union, a chain whose link, forged and fashioned to hold working men in harmonious alliance, would girt them with a defense in every time of trouble and resist invasion, though assailed by all the plutocrats that ever cursed the earth." Debs spent his life trying to bring about this harmonious alliance of working people and standing up for the causes of peace and justice. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
If the Democratic Party wants a big hot issue that would force the GOP to admit its disdain for democracy, how about those Supremes? The Supreme Court, intended to be an apolitical, neutral arbiter of legal cases brought before it, has been elevated to a supreme legislative body by the 6-person majority of extreme right-wing partisans now controlling our third branch of government. I'm hardly a legal scholar, unless you count my week and a half in law school, but you don't have to be in who's who to know what's what. From my lifetime in politics, I can attest that what these Republican judges are doing is pure politics, using their black robes as cover for flagrant political activism, coordinating surreptitiously with right-wing ideologues and corporate money powers that shower favors on them. They intentionally bring up case after case designed to rewrite America's laws. These 6 aloof judges are effectively enacting a new political order of plutocratic, autocratic, and theocratic power over the beliefs and democratic will of America's pluralistic majority. Posing as conservative jurists, they've steadily concentrated arbitrary lawmaking power in their own hands. Reaching way beyond the court's constitutional role of deciding cases, today's Supremes now effectively create law by choosing cases to bring up, favoring those fabricated by such right-wing political allies as the Koch brothers and the Federalist Society. Moreover, the six partisans even rule on legal questions the case doesn't raise, simply making up and answering their own question. This is Jim Hightower saying, with no legal, ethical, or electoral checks on this secretive, anti-democratic government, the court now routinely rules against workers, women, civil rights, the environment, personal liberties, and, well, against America. Shouldn't we have at least one political party calling them out and reining in their arrogance?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said earlier, must have been one heck of a speech Joe Biden gave yesterday, because Hamas released two hostages, two American hostages, and you didn't hear the fake news people, you know, giving him any credit for that. It's quite remarkable how, you know, no credit. But look, I think his speech on foreign affairs was, I got to tell you, it was by far, even I agree with Brett Hume. It was a great speech. It was clear. It was concise, forceful. It was good stuff. I'm here to share some thoughts on the speech and maybe where things go. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney to come talk with us, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what'd you think of Biden's speech?
Yeah, I had a couple of different thoughts. One would question, do you do the prime time speech, you know, for this type of issue? And I think the answer to that is clearly yes, because there's so much up in the air and so much at risk. Now, where it could turn into a train wreck, of course, is going to be not on the Israeli component, part of the Ukraine component, but supposedly there's going to be all kinds of other issues put in there. Now, that may be a carrot to some of the Republicans, throwing in Taiwan, some border security. But then again, that may cause a pile-up on the bill that will have some political problems. But who knows? It's not the end of the world, because you know what? You put it in there, you can take some of the stuff out and keep with the original intent. So that's one thing. Two, I don't know that we have to worry about it so much, because there's no government in the House.
Yeah. No, I was going to get to that in a minute. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how the speech went and what you thought of the overall tone.
You know, he's had some problems, you know, recently, and a lot of criticism. I thought that when he went to Israel, it was well done. I thought the one in the Oval Office was well done. The criticism you'll hear, of course, is, well, he's no Obama or Clinton, or
he's not,
you know, this or that.
I didn't vote for him because he's either one of them.
Yeah. Right. But it's also okay. It's a big deal what's going on, and you don't need a rah-rah speech as much as you need it laid out factually in a concise manner. And that's what he did.
The reality is he showed up, he did his job, and it wasn't, you know, if it was Clinton, it'd be an hour long.
Well, yes, I've sat through those. Exactly.
No, I thought he got to the point, hit the highlights, and did the job and got out.
Right. Yeah, it was fine. I just heard people say, well, it wasn't, you know, dramatic enough. It's okay. We've got a lot of drama going on. We're okay.
Yeah, we don't need more drama. But I think it was interesting that he tied together Putin and Iran and all of that, you know, kind of in the same package, because I do think it's all interconnected.
Well, he appealed. Now, there's one part he could have said, and I would, if I was working for him, I would have told him not to, because then it looks like big oil, et cetera, or, you know, oil concerns. He tied in the nature of why we should be doing this. It's the right thing to do. He tied that in. Because he said, you know, why should we be concerned basically with something so far away? And so he laid it out. Now, other people said, well, he really should have went into what will happen with oil and this and that. And I said, no. Is it correct? Should we have an interest to make sure we have stabilized oil prices? Because you know what? Price increases due to the trucks and our products, et cetera. Yes. Can you lay that out in that speech? No.
No.
You can't.
No, that's something for your Secretary of Agriculture or something to go in.
Right.
Yeah, it's not
then
for that moment.
Like, then you look like you're only there because of, quote, big oil. You know? And that's not why it's why we're there.
No, you're in there to do the right thing. I love the fact that he hit on that. You know, we're the all the eyes of the world are on us. That we're the, you know, we're the beacon of democracy, the arsenal of democracy. You know, he hit on some of those patriotic, you know, puff your chest up tones. I think it was the right thing.
Right. Yeah, so it worked. And yeah. Now, of course, has to go through the process, and with a rudderless house, we'll see what happens.
And this is where I was going to, you know, change tones a little bit. He's asked for $105 billion. That came out today. Congress, you know, the House, you know, they've recessed until Tuesday. So I guess that just sits?
Well, they're going to have a... I really shouldn't laugh about this. I really shouldn't, because it's so pathetic.
But no, it's gallows humor at this point.
But well, they're going to have a candidates forum, a candidates forum. Let's think about just the verbiage on that. They're going to have a candidates forum. They've got Emmer from Minnesota, Arrington from Texas, who's budget committee chair. One is a leadership study committee. I don't even know who Hearn is, Kevin Hearn. And then you got, from Pennsylvania, Muser?
Yeah, Muser, Dan Muser.
Muser. And Scott. And then I just read Repeat Sessions, who I've known forever. You know, he'll run again for something. He'll run for this. But so they're going to have probably 8-9 people in this thing. Now,
you forgot Byron Donald and that contingent.
Right. So they're going to have those amount of people in there. And then they're going to have this thing, I guess, where what do you get 5 or 10 minutes to present your candidate forum on a Monday night. I believe they're going to do this. Then they're going to try to vote somewhere around Tuesday or Wednesday is what they're going to try to do. Now, there's only one way this works. If I was running that caucus, here's what I would at least say, and that is, all right, before we start this entire thing, we're going to take a vote. Do we have 217 votes that no matter who wins this in the caucus vote, we all support them? That is the first vote I'm going to take, Rick. If we don't have 217 votes, I don't know how the process goes forward.
Yeah, I don't know how you get to though.
But you see what I'm saying? That's the first vote. No matter who comes out of this, do you vote to support them? If you got 217, let them all stand up there, tap dance, sing, whatever they want to do. Then
hand out candy.
Then, you know, hand out candy, money, campaign checks. I don't know. Maybe they'll promise to leave if they put him in as speaker in 2 years, and then they'll get elected. But they'll do these things. But they need to have that. They really need to have that vote. And if they don't have that, then out of 12 candidates, let's say they narrow it down to 3 and the top 3 has a vote, then they go to the floor of the House and this happens again. Now, at that point in time, I don't care who gets mad. I think there's got to be a coalition of centrists that sit down with the Democrats, and then you have a government by coalition. By the way, you know this. Twice in our recent history, the Senate was a 50-50. Remember?
Yeah.
And remember what they did? They divided up the goodies. Certain people chaired this, certain people chaired that. So we've had that type of government before. This isn't novel.
And who knows? Maybe once again they'll work together. I say what you do is you bring in a keg. You get them all drunk and you know, let them loosen up a little bit and then let them vote. Because maybe they'll let down their guard and say, look, you're not getting out of here. And then you lock the door to the bathroom and you say, nope, you're not getting out of here until you vote. You got to do something to move this along. And I don't think a lot of them, their bladders are going to hold out.
In Appalachia, where I'm from, so it's okay. It'd work there.
So what do you think of this? I mean, I'm not sure how to frame this. I'm looking at the humiliation of Jim Jordan, and I'm just kind of, I don't know. I'm kind of happy about it. Is that wrong?
Well, I think a lot of people are happy about it. No, it's not wrong, because you know what? He should have known. He should have known he couldn't make it. He should have known that. He didn't make it against Scalise. He didn't make it on round one. He was losing more. He should have known it.
Yeah.
I mean, were his advisors lying to him? No, Jim, this is like a wrestling match. You keep going, round one, two, three, and four. Is that what this was about? I mean, you and I talked on your show. This wasn't the McCarthy thing. McCarthy was a different world. McCarthy was a different person. McCarthy raised money. McCarthy kind of knew the system, how it works, public policy-wise, et cetera. That's why Jordan thought he could do a McCarthy and go 15 rounds. I knew he couldn't.
Yeah. No, I think he found out just how unlikable he is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that one's done. And this is the biggest dysfunction. What do you want to call it? Disgrace. Whatever terminology you want to use for it. Pathetic function of the Republicans in decades to do this. I mean, they're creating history, all right.
Yeah, no, we're living history.
Wrong side of history.
We are most certainly.
Wrong side of history.
We are most certainly living history.
Right.
But here's the thing, and this is what's frustrating to me, and maybe you've got a thought on this, as dysfunctional as the Republicans have been, they really aren't paying a price for it. I mean, Biden's still getting beat up. His polling numbers are in the can, and Republicans aren't. None of this seems to be sticking to them. Or am I not seeing the right polling?
Well, first of all, we've got, again, the weirdest time. I've been in politics since I've been 18. I'm 69 years old. I never, never have seen things function like this. Look at the polling on the president with Israel, right? Basically, everything they answered, the people doing the poll about Israel, everything Biden did, everything. But Biden came out not, you know, the quote leader in the polling. You tell me how that happens, right?
I'll tell you exactly how it happens. We have a very powerful right-wing media in this country that spreads disinformation and lies and propaganda at an alarming rate. And the American people have not been given the opportunity to have actual information.
Yeah, no counter. Yeah, I believe you're correct on that. I do. No counter. So what may happen here, although the polling's close and Trump's still, you know, in the hunt, but what may happen is you might have a close, this is what I think, and we're just not seeing it because people are kind of numb to all this now. You're going to have a close presidential, but there'll be an impact on the House Republicans come 2024 for their inability to constitute a government, to run a government. This isn't going to be the end of this. If they pick a speaker Tuesday, this, as you know, is not the end of this. One of the eight is they're going to get angry again.
Yeah.
They're going to get angry at something because they didn't get their way, and they're going to, you know, throw their toys all over the room, and that's going to happen. You know, and I know it, and that's what, you know, Baby Gates is going to lead the charge, is what's going to happen.
Another temper tantrum.
So I think they may not be paying a price now, but I think they will in the long run. And I know a lot of people, including if you listen to Gingrich and others, and some of the money people, are not going to be really willing to invest in the House because they're going to know that the House is doomed if it continues its course. So I think it's not showing up now because of the weirdness of Trump and Biden and how the polling runs. But I think they'll be hurt in the long run if they don't get their act together. They, from here on out, Rick, have to do two things. Two, they have to pick a speaker without going multiple rounds, and they have to get a mantra together, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 items, stick to them, do the budgets, et cetera, et cetera. They have to do that perfectly the next year. Any fights or flaws does them in. So I think it's not showing in the polling. They're not feeling it, maybe, but it's out there.
Yeah,
it's It's waiting to happen.
You know, as bad as this country's gerrymandered, I think that I fear they believe that they're not going to pay a price because, you know, things are so badly, you know, like the Gateses of the world, the Marjorie Trainwreck Greens, they're going to be just fine. The crazies will be just fine. And that's what concerns me. I just got probably the funniest email I've ever gotten in my life, and I got to share it with you. Mackenzie sent me an email, says, "You're wrong." I don't know what about what. I'm not sure.
Everything.
It's just you're wrong. So
Are you sure it wasn't directed to Matt Gaetz and it just accidentally got to you?
Could have been.
Probably.
You're wrong. I'm like, okay. Well, I don't know what about, but I'm wrong. Lastly, I said something earlier that got a couple of responses to. I said that Trump has been the first ex-president to attack a sitting president. In my lifetime, this has been my reality. I don't remember Carter going after Reagan. I don't remember Dukakis going after Reagan after the fact. I don't remember any of that stuff. Am I on the right track?
I'm trying to remember if there has ever been a criticism. It's been so mild that, I mean, I can't remember it in my, you know, political time.
Yeah, there might have been a comment that someone overheard said, but, you know, nothing like we're normalizing today, which is you've got an ex-president who from day one has been attacking Joe Biden and an entire media culture that's been attacking Biden. It's no wonder his numbers are as bad as they are.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't remember direct attacks. I think there was a couple of times where a president was asked and they might have disagreed with a sitting president, but I don't remember anything in my memory of like an attack basis. No, and I don't.
I mean, because here's the reason I bring this up, and this is where I want to end this. The reason I bring this up is we're normalizing crazy. We're normalizing the worst kind of behavior that hasn't been normal in the past. I mean, this kind of fight in the House, this isn't normal. Mm-hmm. The kind of rhetoric we're getting out of an ex-president towards a sitting president, I don't want it to be normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're correct. And also, Rick, what is abnormal in the system now, and I've said this many times, you know, I can tell you Republicans I don't like, so this is not me being biased, you know, but I have not cared for Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, right? But I would defend her right to have an opinion, okay?
Right.
And now people are talking about Marjorie Taylor, Three Names is talking about censoring Congresswoman Tlaib, but censoring her. This whole thing started in the House, and it's gone back and forth now. And so I think that's abnormal, too, not only of attacking a president constantly as a former, but also normalizing the fact that you can't disagree now.
Yeah.
You can't. You disagree, you get threatened with censure by the House.
Yeah, well, it's cancel culture, Bob. They're going to blame the left, you know, and Democrats.
It used to be if you didn't pay your taxes, yeah, you can get censured, but not for having an opinion.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But again, you know, I look at our media culture. You know, I saw a clip from CNN. You know, they're talking about, you know, what's going on, and the Chyron read Democrats divided. I'm going, what? What kind of Orwellian world are you living in?
Well, it's all bizarre. I mean, it is the whole mechanism, the system, it's dysfunctional. It's and like I said to my daughter, I was telling my daughter and son, normally, my dad would say something, and I'd be like, okay, Dad, you're getting older, you know, in your day, quote.
Yeah.
And now I kind of felt like that, you know, in my day. But I'm not getting older. The system fell apart.
Yeah.
I'm not getting older. It was better under Gingrich and Clinton. Never thought I'd say that.
The thing is I kind of blame Gingrich for this because he blew up a lot of this stuff and started to normalize that kind of behavior that in the past we hadn't had.
Well, he did the bomb throwing, but the thing about Gingrich, and I remember on Prevailing Wage, you had I call them the old bulls that came to Gingrich. And in the conference, they had the guts, closed conference caucus, to stand up and say, you know, you 50 labor squishes, you 50 labor softies. You have no right to do this. And they would say, Newt, stop them. And Newt would say, they have a vote.
Yeah.
We go out there, take your best shot and vote. You know, now the people running the system try to eliminate those people out of the system. So that's where I think at least it functioned a lot better, is, you know, a free standing vote and take your best shot and you win or you lose.
Yeah. No.
You know?
We'll see where this takes us. But as always, Bob, I appreciate the time and the input. Good stuff.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Remember, miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast. Highly important that you subscribe. Never miss a moment. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1983. That was the day that musician Merle Travis died. Known for his unique finger-picking guitar style, Travis wrote songs that captured the hard life of the coal miner. His songs drew from what he had seen growing up in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky. He was born in the town of Rosewood, the son of a coal miner. In 1947, Merle released a 4-record set, Folk Songs from the Hills. The album contained the song Dark as a Dungeon, what would become one of his most recognizable songs.
Come and listen, you fellers, so young and so fine, and seek not your fortune in the dark, dreary mines. It will form as a habit and seep in your soul till the stream of your blood is as black as the coal. It's dark as a dungeon and damp as the dew, for danger is double and pleasures are few.
Another song about the life of a miner was this song titled 9-Pound Hammer.
It's a long way to Harlan, it's a long way to Hazard, just to get a little brew, just to get a little brew. When I'm long gone, just make my tombstone out of number 9 coal. Old number 9 coal.
Perhaps Travis's most famous song was this one, 16 Tons.
Now some people say a man's made out of mud, but a poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood, skin and bones, a mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company
like
store.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Back to the Rick Smith Show. So Lewis sent me an email during the break, and again, this I love these emails, and thank you, Lewis. I get, you know, email like, you're wrong. I get those all the time, and they're usually followed up with, you know, some expletives and some reason why I'm wrong. This was brilliant. You're wrong. Okay, I'm told that a lot. But Lewis writes, everything you've been talking about tonight, Rick, is spot on. Yes, we need worker empowerment, he writes, a vibrant labor movement, and especially a functional government. A government has been under assault and delegitimized for over 4 decades through neoliberalism. Neoliberalism has done great damage to this country, and I feel one of its greatest damages is to the concept of community. We've been spoon-fed the alleged powers of hyper-individualism that it seems we forgot the importance of such things like the common good, collectivism, and community. It's time to rebalance the scale where individualism and collectivity are in equal balance. If not, we will continue to go down this slippery slope of social Darwinism. Have a great evening, Rick. And look, you know, I talk about this often. I'm as much of an individual as anyone. I don't want government telling me what to do. There are things that government should do, things that they shouldn't. Roads, bridges, education, healthcare, you know, making sure we have safe workplaces, safe water. Yeah, those things that we want. I say all the time, government should do the things that we can only do collectively. I can't pave the road out in front of my house. I don't have that kind of money. I can't build the bridge. I can't regulate the big corporations. I'm still amused, and it's been a number of years. I guess it was like 2013, actually, because we had gone down to West Texas where there was a fertilizer plant explosion. And it was wow. I have not seen such devastation. And they had a fertilizer plant, you know, right next to a school. And it, you know, those really big round metal poles that hold the basketball hoops up were literally flattened to the ground. Still cemented in the ground, the metal from the explosion just bent straight down to the ground. All of them. I mean, it was remarkable. And
you're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W22 80 P. Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.